all of us make claims at times. I think all of us have heard a child say at one time or other, I can climb that tree. We say, I can lift that box. And as you look at what people claim they can do, some of those claims are very believable. Some are just plain ridiculous. And some of them, if they are true, are very amazing. Today, we finish our series on Jesus' I Am statements from the book of John. And we're going to see that Jesus, in this passage, the verses we're looking at, he makes some jaw-dropping claims. He makes claims that are way, way out of the ordinary. And he does it in the middle of a very contentious conversation. And the verses that we're going to read here in just a minute together are at the end of that conversation. So remain seated. Let's read together from the screen, John chapter 8, verses 54 to 59. Let's read together. Jesus answered, "If I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say he is our God. But you have not known him. I know him. If I were to say that I do not know him, I would be a liar like you. But I do know him, and I keep his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced that he would see my day. He saw it and was glad. So the Jews said to him, 'You are not yet 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham?' Jesus said to them, 'Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am.' So they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple." What I want to do today is have us walk through this whole conversation that Jesus has, and it's a fairly long one. It's most of John chapter 8. It begins in John 8, verse 12, where Jesus says to this group of people in the temple, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Now, to claim to be the light of the world is pretty astounding. Now, just to be clear, he's not saying he's replacing the sun. Okay, he's talking about spiritual light. Well, just as you and I need physical light to be able to see and do all the things that we need to do, we need spiritual light to see God. If you and I don't have any spiritual light, we don't see God. We don't see the things of God at all. And Jesus says he is that light. Now, the Jews that are listening to Jesus have an issue with the way that he is speaking. They think that Jesus is speaking on his own authority, that he's this rogue. And to be sure, if you look back at history, you will see that he is not the first person to make some audacious claims. There had been several other men in the years, many years before him, before Jesus, who had claimed to be the Messiah. Their claim died when they did, because everything fizzled out. So it's not totally wrong for them to wonder about Jesus. And so these people challenge Jesus, and they basically ask him, "Who can back you up? Who can verify what you're saying?" And so in verse 18, Jesus says, "I am one who bears witness about myself, and the Father who sent me bears witness about me." Then verse 19, "You know neither me nor my Father." Now, when Jesus talks about the Father, he's talking about God the Father, one of the three persons of the Trinity. He says, "I'm telling you about me," and God also is validating what I'm saying. But in verse 21, Jesus goes on to say, "I am going away, and you will seek me, and you will die in your sin." Now, you don't say that in polite conversation, okay? But Jesus does. "I'm going away, you'll seek me, you will die in your sin. Where I am going, you cannot come." Jesus knows that he's going to return to heaven after he dies and rises from the dead. And he says, "I'm going to go to heaven." Well, what he's saying is, "I'm going to heaven, but you're not." And then, think about how insulting his one part of this is to a group of people that are very religious. "You're going to die in your sin." Now, The Jews don't immediately respond to Jesus. They key on his words where he says, I'm leaving and you can't come. And so they talk amongst themselves and they ask themselves, is Jesus going to commit suicide? Now, think for a second how they see themselves and how they see Jesus. They're assuming that they are good. And since Jesus doesn't agree with him, he's not good. He's bad. Okay? He knows, they know, they believe good people go to heaven. Bad people don't. Now, it's kind of, you catch it in there, they think they're the standard. They're comparing Jesus, well, since Jesus doesn't match up with me, and since I'm good, of course, I'm going to heaven, but he can't be. And back then, suicide was a stigma. It was a shameful thing. It is today. And so he must have done, must going to be do something really bad in order to not be where we're going to be. But then they do speak to Jesus and they ask him, who are you? Now, they're not asking his name or where he's from. What they're basically saying is, why should we listen to you? Who are you that I should listen to you? And in verse 28, oh, I'm sorry, not yet. Not, sorry, got ahead of myself. Jesus says, well, who am I? Just as what I've been telling you. Now, think about that. That's a non-answer. He didn't actually say anything with that one. Who am I? I've already told you who I am. And it actually is a reminder for us that you and I, there are times when somebody's asking us questions about our spiritual faith, you don't have to answer directly because it's not the wisest thing to do to answer directly. Jesus here doesn't yet. He is going to answer who he is, but not yet. Verse 28, Jesus says, when you have lifted up the Son of Man, then you will know that I am he and that I do nothing on my own authority, but I speak as just as the Father taught me. So when he says Son of Man, he's talking about himself. When he says being lifted up, he's talking about being on a cross, because physically that's what happened to you. They lay the cross on the ground, they nail you to it, and then they stand it up, and you're way up so everybody can see you in the crowd. He's talking about his death. But notice what he does then. Let's come back to it. Did we lose it? I do nothing on my own authority. You will see several times in this conversation, Jesus makes the point, he's not speaking off the cuff. He's not speaking on his own. He is saying what God has sent him to say, which is another claim that he's been sent by God. But he yet makes a bigger claim. Verse 31, if you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Now, in that day, there were a number of teachers that had followers. You could call them students or disciples. And Jesus is saying, if you abide in my word, excuse me, if you agree with me, if you hold to my word like you would to life, then you really are following me. And later on, he says, he is the truth. So when he says, when you'll know the truth, now he's talking on one level, he's talking about the truth that God gives. But on the other, since he is the truth, he says, if you cling to Jesus' words, you'll know Jesus. You'll have a different kind of relationship with him. You will be depending upon him. You will look to him for life. And when you do, you'll be set free. Well, in verse 32, the group responds, we are descendants of Abraham, and we have never been enslaved to anyone. Now, if they're talking about the Jewish people, they're very clearly wrong, because there was quite a long time there were slaves in Egypt. But I think what's really going on here, they're not thinking in spiritual terms. I'm reading through the book of Ecclesiastes right now, my daily Bible reading. And as I saw this part, I thought, aha, these people are thinking under the sun. They're not really thinking from God's perspective about themselves and about life. They're not thinking in spiritual terms. And Jesus is speaking in spiritual terms. And so in a sense, they're kind of talking past each other a little bit. Well, verse 34, Jesus responds. And he says, everyone who commits sin, but you'll notice I added something to help you understand. In the Greek, the sense of the verb is this. Everyone who continually commits sin, that is, it's a way of life, so it's habitual. And sin, remember, the root of sin is a distrust of God. It's out of you and I not trusting God that we disobey Him. It's out of you and I not trusting God that we ignore Him and turn away from Him and do all of these things. And Jesus says, everyone who has this way of life, of turning away from God, is a slave to sin. Then in verse 37, He continues, I know that you're offspring of Abraham. Okay, so He knows. He says, I know that you're physically descended from Abraham. If you took a little swab and did it on your cheek and sent it off to wherever it is you send that and did a DNA test, yes, it would show that you are descendants of Abraham. Yet, He says, you seek to kill Me because My word finds no place in you. He says, you're against Me. Now He's pulling back to verse 31, where we talked about abiding in His word, depending upon Jesus' word. He's saying, you don't leave any place in your life for what I'm telling you. Then verse 39, He goes on. Jesus said to them, if you were Abraham's children, and here He means if you believed like Abraham did. That's what it says in Genesis. Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. If you believed like Abraham, you would be doing what Abraham did. Abraham trusted God. And if you trust God, you would trust Jesus because Jesus was sent by God. Verse 40, but now you seek to kill Me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. Yet again, He's saying these are not His own words. This is not what Abraham did. You are doing what your father did. And we're going to see in a second, He's now saying that their father spiritually is Satan. And so when He talks about God or Satan as father, He's talking about a spiritual relationship. Then verse 42, if God were your father, you would love Me. For I came from God and I am here. I came not of My own accord, but He sent Me. So again, He's saying He's under authority. He's doing what God the Father tells Him to do. But then He asks a question, verse 43. Why do you not understand what I say? Well, He doesn't wait for them to answer. He answers His own question. And He says, you don't understand because you cannot bear to hear My word. Verse 44. You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and has nothing to do with the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. Because I tell you the truth, you do not believe Me. Now, this is not the sweet, never offend Jesus. Okay? Some people say that's who Jesus is. Clearly, no. No. I'm surprised that they didn't start rioting right here. Okay? He is offending them left and right. They're religious people. They're saying, we have the true claim to God, the God who created everything. And He says, you guys, you lost it. You're so disconnected from God. Spiritually, your father is Satan. And what does Satan want to do? He wants as many people as possible to be condemned along with him. He knows he's already lost it. He's going to pull everybody he can with him. And he'll do it however he can. Either through people that reject religion or people that are very religious. As long as, whichever way you go, you don't trust God. You think there's a better way, that you know better. So look at what's going on here. Jesus knows that these Jews are physically descended from Abraham. He's not arguing that. He knows they're religious. He also knows that in their way they are, quote-unquote, worshiping God. But they're strangers to God. We have the same, that's true across time. You look at Cain and Abel. You see it there, you see it all the way till today. People who are strangers to God. He continues, verse 46. Which one of you convicts me of sin? And there's, I would imagine, Total silence. Nobody says anything. Nobody can. If I tell the truth, why do you not believe me? He's starting to push them even further. Whoever is of God hears the words of God. The reason why you do not hear them is that you are not of God. Now, he's not saying that physically they don't hear his words. An example that I've used the last few weeks, I think, helps explain what's going on. Talked about the idea of multiple flocks of sheep with their shepherds, and sometimes at night, multiple flocks would come together in one sheepfold. That's like a fenced-in area. The sheep feel safe. The sheep are safe. And in the morning, the way that they separate the sheep out is one of the shepherds stands at the gate, opens it, and he starts calling his sheep. All the sheep in the sheepfold hear his voice. All of them. But only the ones that are in his flock get up and follow. All the rest of them say, that's not my shepherd. I'm just going to sit here and keep chewing the cud. And it's that kind of picture here. These people hear physically what Jesus says, but they don't follow him. His words just kind of fall off, drop off. They don't stick with what's going on. Well, they don't really have an answer to this, any kind of a good answer. And when you don't have any kind of a good answer, you attack the speaker. Okay, and in verse 48, that's what you see happen. The Jews answered Jesus, "Are we not right in saying that you are a Samaritan and have a demon?" Okay, now in that day, Jews hated Samaritans. If you were a quote-unquote good Jew, you would do everything you could to avoid the Samaritans. You would never talk to them. You wouldn't do business with them. So when they call him a Samaritan and a Jew, they're saying, we have every right to ignore you, to not listen to what you're saying. Verse 49, Jesus says, "I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. Yet I do not seek my own glory. There is one who seeks Jesus' glory, and he is the judge. Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." That's an amazing claim. It's either true or ridiculous. There's no easy way to kind of just set it aside. Jesus is saying, God the Father is going to honor me. And here, when he says, anyone who keeps my word will never see death, he's talking just like he did at Lazarus, just before he raised Lazarus from the dead. He talked a little bit about physical death, but here and there, he also talked about spiritual death, being spiritually separated from God. And he says, if you keep his word, you won't be ever spiritually separated from God at all. Then verse 52, the Jews say to him, and please don't read this with a flat voice. They say to him, "Now we know that you have a demon. Abraham died, as did the prophets, and yet you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham who died? Are you greater than the prophets who died? Who do you make yourself out to be?" And that's the real question from them. Who do you say that you are? Now, you look at the book of Hebrews, the whole front of the book of Hebrews, the author's making the case. Jesus is greater. He's greater than the angels. He's greater than Moses. He deserves it. But in these people's minds, Jesus is just a man. And only a crazy man would make these kinds of claims. Now we come to our verses for today. You realize, you can see now how contentious this discussion is that they're having, going back and forth. Verse 54, Jesus answered them, "If I glorify myself, my glory is nothing." Yeah, you're right. If this is all from me and about me, you have every right to ignore me. Then he says, "It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say he is our God." Put together the underlined parts. He's saying, my Father is our God. My Father is the God that you claim to be your God. Jesus is claiming here a mind-boggling level of intimacy with God. Back then, they did not think and see that you could have that kind of relationship with God. They'd let ideas from other religions kind of work their way a little bit into Judaism. Beyond the changes, all the things where they twisted, where they thought they could actually be good enough to know God and to be accepted by God. He says, my Father is your God, but he's not done yet, verse 55. But you have not known God. I know God. If I were to say that I do not know God, I would be a liar like you. But I do know God, and I keep his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced that he would see my day. He saw it and was glad. So the Jews said to him, you are not yet 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham? Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. So they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. Jesus is saying to these people, you don't know God. You have no relationship with God. You're either his adopted child or you're his enemy. It's really the only two choices. Then Jesus calls the Jews liars, again, offending them. And then verse 58, if you look at it grammatically, oh, it's all messed up. Okay, he says, truly, truly, which in the Greek, amen, 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 it's true. I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. And what Jesus is doing here is he is using the name that God gave himself when he spoke to Moses. Moses grew up 40 years in Egypt, then spent 40 years in the desert shepherding sheep. Those 40 years ended when God comes to Moses and says, Moses, I have chosen you to lead my people, the people of Israel, out of slavery. And he asks a very good question. He says, okay, so if I go there and they ask who sent me, who do I tell them? And God says, tell them, I am sent you. When he says, I am, he's saying, I have lived from eternity past. I'm alive now. I will live into eternity future. I'm not dependent on anyone. I have life within myself. I am. And Jesus says, you want to know who I am? They had asked him, who do you make yourself out to be? And he says, I'll tell you. I am. I'm God. And their response, they understood what he said. There was no confusion. Some people will say Jesus never claimed to be the Son of God. We've already seen he does. Some people say he's never claimed to be God. Here it is in black and white. They understood his claim and they thought he was speaking blasphemy, and so they tried to kill him. Now we kind of walked our way through this, and Jesus has made a lot of claims. I want to put them all together so we can see them in one place. What claims did Jesus make? First, he said he's the light of the world, spiritual light so that you and I can see God and see the things of God. He claims that God sent him. It's implied, but he's saying God is happy with what Jesus is doing. He says that he will set people free, which again implies that we're slaves. Jesus says he speaks the truth. Jesus says he has done no wrong. And nobody can say anything against that. You and I can't say that at all. Jesus says he speaks the words of God. He says that he saves, that he rescues, that people that listen to him and respond to him will never see eternal death. Jesus says that God will glorify him. In that sense, God will validate Jesus. And yes, what he said was true, what he did was right, exactly. And we have that verse in the New Testament where it says that it will be such that when God will lift his name up and put his name above every name so that we bow to him. Jesus claims that God is his Father, and then he says that he himself is God. Now, over these last several weeks, we looked at some other claims that Jesus made, that he's the bread of life, that he sustains life. He gives physical life and spiritual life, that he's the resurrection and the life. He's the answer to our problem, that he's the way, the truth, and the life. He also said in front of people like these Jews that he would rise from the dead after 3 days. And we know this because after he did allow himself to be arrested and tried and crucified, and his body was put in the grave, the Jewish religious leaders come to Pilate and say, look, well, they don't say this part. We are so glad he is finally dead. We are done with this guy. But what they come to them and say is, look, he made the claim that after 3 days he was going to rise from the dead. So would you put a guard, a Roman guard, on his tomb so that nobody will bother it? And Pilate did. And so those guards are standing there that morning on Sunday when the angels came and rolled away the stone. And their response, they fainted dead away. And why did they roll away the stone? Because Jesus was risen, just as he said. So the question is this: what do you and I do with these claims? I love the way that C.S. Lewis put it. We only really have three choices. First, Jesus was a liar. That everything he said he knew was not true. Second, he's a lunatic. On the level of a person who comes up to you on the street and says, hi, I'm a poached egg. And they believe it. If he's a liar or a lunatic, all of these claims are ridiculous. They're totally worth ignoring. Not even worth bothering with anymore. But the third option is this. He is Lord. He is who he claims to be. It all hinges on his resurrection. And he rose from the dead. So here's the last question. What is your relationship to this Jesus? Not the sweet Jesus who never says anything harsh. Not to the Jesus who has long flowing hair and blue eyes. I don't know how that's supposed to be. And walks slowly as he pats all the children on the head. Now, Jesus loves children. But you can see here, this is Jesus too. And this is Jesus starting to rumble. The lion is starting to rumble and says, this is who I am. He is God himself. This is not a tame Jesus that you and I can fit into our agenda, though I'm sure every one of us has tried at various times. This is not a Jesus that we can mess with or play games with or take lightly. This Jesus is the one who says that he died and rose again so that we could be forgiven and reconciled to God. And there are scriptures that talk about God. There's one in particular that I remember where it says, God is the one who forgives and reconciles, so fear him. Not just tremble and be in terror of him. He's not holding that as a stick to beat on us, but it's a sense of fear in awe and amazement. God would do this. God would do this for me. And he's serious about all of this, so we don't play games. And then finally, Jesus has a claim because he is God of all. He has a claim on our life. So if you and I reject Jesus, we're rejecting all hope. If you and I embrace him, it's not just a piece of fire insurance. It's a relationship that changes our life. It's a relationship that changes everything about our life. We're not the same anymore because of who he is and because of what he has done for us. This meal is a reminder. In fact, he tells us that it's a reminder of who he is. In 1 Corinthians in chapter 11, we read this. On the night when Jesus was betrayed, he took a loaf of bread. When he'd given thanks, he broke it and said, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." He's putting to words what you see in Isaiah. By his stripes we are healed. He is broken so that we can be made whole. In the same way, Jesus took the cup of wine after supper, saying, "This cup is the new covenant relationship, going from enemy to adopted child. This is the new covenant relationship between God and you, sealed by the shedding of Jesus' blood. Do this in remembrance of me as often as you drink it. For every time you eat this bread and drink this cup, you are announcing, you are remembering, you are celebrating Jesus' death until he comes again. What he did because he chose to love us." But there's a warning then that comes. If anyone eats this bread or drinks this cup of the Lord unworthily, that is, you're not thinking of Jesus. You're treating Jesus lightly. You're treating his sacrifice lightly. Saying, I want Jesus as my bud, my friend. That's not one of the choices. You either reject him, or he's your God and King, your Savior, your Rescuer, and then he's your friend that cares for you. Anyone who eats this bread, drinks this cup of the Lord unworthily, that person is guilty of sinning against the body and the blood of the Lord. That is why you should examine yourself before eating the bread and drinking from the cup. For if you eat the bread and drink the cup unworthily, not honoring the body of Christ, you are eating and drinking God's judgment on yourself. So it's a warning for us to come, but not to come just seriously, morosely, to come seriously and joyfully, to recognize Jesus had to die because of who I am and what I've done. If there were nobody else, he would still have to die. But he chose to. He chose because he chose to love us. God chose not to leave us where we are. God chose to pursue us so that he could bring us in and have this wonderful relationship that we get just the littlest taste of now. I mean, that's why most churches, you don't ever see a piece of bread this big, okay, for communion. Okay, usually it's even smaller than that. But it's a picture, in a sense, of this little taste that we get of the bread and the wine, that this relationship that starts now, that God starts with us here on earth, is just the little taste of what we're going to see. And one day, everything that clouds it, everything that muffles it, everything that keeps it from being fully understood and realized is going to be gone, and we'll be there with him. So we come seriously, but we also come to celebrate. But just think about why it is that Jesus said, we have this meal, and to have it often, and to do it in remembrance of him. Because he knows that we've got all these things that we're dealing with every day, every week, and we need these reminders. Because when we remember this encourages us to not turn away from God. To put a double negative, it encourages us to not distrust. To turn around to the positive, it encourages us to trust God. And that's important, because there are lots of times as we go through the day where we're baffled about what is going on. And God, if you really love me, why am I having all this problem? And he says, I do love you. And I've got a purpose for this. I'm going to walk you through it. It encourages us that God is with us, that he is for us, that he cares for us. It prompts us to love others like Jesus did, to have a giving kind of love as we serve others and care for them. It also finally then strengthens our hope that what God promised and what Jesus talks about, life and eternity in heaven, is going to happen, that it's ours. The elders would come forward